This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps Behind the Black. The website takes us to Australia. Spaceports. Now, I've been eager for spaceports around the world, but I've learned to hesitate. Bob, is this good news? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It appears to be generally good news. There's been, in Australia, there was a major change in government. They threw out the so-called fake conservative government party that was in power during COVID, and they put in a Labor Party that's even more leftist, but they put it in because they threw out the other party for not doing its job. And in the process, there seems to be things going on related to space that are somewhat intriguing. First, we have two licenses issued in Australia by its government for two different spaceports. First, a planning minister for the province, for the state of South Australia, the southern coast, has issued a final approval for allowing launches at the southern launch facility on that southern coast. And this approval will allow them to do up to 36 launches a year. Rockets can be no longer than 30 meters, but that covers a great deal of ground for most rockets. And there are other restrictions he's put on, being from a Labor leftist government. But nonetheless, they approved the launch, and this hopes to have its first orbital launch by the end of next year. That's one of three spaceports in Australia. The second story has to do with one of the other spaceports. This is the Bowen spaceport on the east coast of Australia, and this is basically owned by a private company, Gilmore Space, an Australian company, rocket startup that wants to launch its own rocket. And it had hoped to launch that rocket early this year, but unfortunately, it was waiting for its launch license, just sitting, not getting the launch license. Sounds familiar, like the UK, you know? But that launch license was issued by the Australian Space Agency this week. And now Gilmore Space says, and that's on its founder, the Gilmore brothers, they have announced that they hope to have their first rocket launched before the end of this year. In fact, within 30 days. They've been ready, and they just needed that environmental approval. And so now we have two different spaceports that are going to be doing launches out of Australia in the next, within the next year or so. So that's the good news from this Labor Party. And it's interesting, it contrasts with their other actions in space. The same government this week canceled a $7 billion satellite contract with Lockheed Martin's Australian division. This was issued only 18 months ago by the previous government. It was to build geosynchronous communication satellites for Australia's military. They've canceled it. And the reason they say they've canceled it is because they want to focus on, instead of big gold-plated giant geosynchronous small number of satellites, which is the old way of doing things, they want to shift focus to going with the large constellations of much redundancy in low orbit. And so, and this is being launched by commercial companies in the U.S., but maybe in Australia as well. And so they canceled that contract, and so we'll see if that's the case. But it does appear that they are shifting gears into a different direction. And in both cases, it appears they're encouraging commercial space, because this Lockheed Martin contract really didn't do that. Depending on lots of smaller constellations, will promote everything in the industry much more effectively.
Bob, is this Starlink or is this that competitor Starlink? What was
OneWeb. OneWeb you're thinking of. They haven't named any companies, but the point is there are at least two constellations in orbit now, OneWeb and Starlink, that can do some of this stuff. SpaceX especially, its Starshield versions of Starlink is already being provided to the military in the U.S. But OneWeb could do some of this as well. And you got the Kuiper system from Amazon that's supposedly going to start launching next year. And so that's another option. So they have options. On top of that, even those are all commercial systems, but they, you know, they could do what U.S. military did with Starlink. They could talk to these various constellations about having them launch small constellations, low orbit constellations for the military expressly, independent of the commercial constellations. And because they're already building the commercial ones, they could do this cheaply and quickly and more effectively. It'd be better military. So that's where I think that's going, but we don't know who yet.
Germany, a space plane. Who's building it?
It's called Polaris Space Planes. This is a company that has been flying what it calls its mirror prototype last year and the year before. And their goal is to build a plane that could take off from a runway and reach orbit using an aerospike engine in flight. This is a special kind of nozzle that's been proposed for decades that nobody has ever flown yet successfully. Their first prototype did a bunch of test launches, and then they lost it on a flight in May. It got damaged. So they immediately accelerated construction on their second larger prototype called Mira 2, and they've begun test flights of that. They've already begun several test flights, building to adding an aerospike engine to that prototype. It's not a full-size prototype. It's unmanned. But adding an aerospike engine to it and do actual flight tests with the aerospike engine to test the nozzle design. It's a strange nozzle design that uses the atmosphere partly to create the nozzle. It's just interesting. Anyway, if they do that aerospike flight, it would be the first time an aerospike nozzle engine has ever flown anywhere, because there's been a lot of attempts, but no one's ever gotten it to flight. And so they're moving forward, and eventually they hope to build a full-size, scaled space plane that could take off at runways and land on runways and do lots of different things in orbit at the same time.
All right, Europe has discovered Starlink. They could just buy it, Bob. It's $110 a month. Why do they need their own?
The European mentality is they always want to have their own, and there's something to be said for that. But the European Commission finally approved, after years of discussion, a gigantic contract from a consortium of European satellite companies to build their own government-conceived and government-designed communication satellite, kind of designed to duplicate what Starlink and OneWeb are doing. I personally think this is really a boondoggle, and it's really a bad idea. First of all, they're spreading the business out to almost every single satellite company in Europe, which really makes for a you're talking about an animal conceived by a committee. It doesn't provide efficiency. It's going to take 6 years to launch. meanwhile, as you say, Starlink and OneWeb are here, and I got to tell you, Kuiper will be up in orbit by that time as well, right now it looks like. So this, to me, seems like a really bad idea, but it has to do with Europeans' attitude. They want to have their own. And in this case, the problem is that it's a government-run thing. They're not asking these satellite companies to come up with their own ideas. The government's designing it, and that usually does not lead to success, John.
Bob, the European Space Agency, the European Union, are all looking like early NASA. They're employment bureaus. And
I wouldn't say early NASA. I'd say late NASA, just to be precise. But, yes, they are beginning to they've been that way now for more than a decade and a half. Their operation isn't designed to make money, profit, and garner business. Their system is to provide jobs within the European Union, and that's not really the way to do things.
Relativity. We haven't talked about it for a while. It looks like it's in trouble. How so?
Money troubles. There was a story in Bloomberg from anonymous sources, which means we must take this skeptical, that says that relativity has experienced serious cash shortages. Now, relativity is one of the rocket startups that did launch a rocket about 2 years ago, the Terran 1 rocket, a small version. It's a company that says it was building its rockets completely by 3D printing. It bragged. That was its one goal. After that one launch, it abandoned that rocket and said it was going to now focus on its larger Terran R rocket. And that would be launching in about 2 or 3 years. That's in 26, they hoped. The issue here is there have been a lot of rumors that I've gotten from my own sources, and this story confirms it, that they have dropped 3D printing for a lot of the construction of Terran R, and that they are having financial problems. They're having trouble. They wasted so much money on 3D printing and found it wasn't cost-effective that they're short of cash right now to build the rocket. And this is unfortunate. I always thought that one of the reasons they abandoned the Terran 1 was because they suddenly faced serious regulatory burdens from the FAA and decided they'd be better off delaying further launches until maybe there was a new administration of power. And that, I think, is part of that decision. But now they have cash problems. And so this might be another one of those rocket startups in the United States that's going to fail because of many reasons.
Hypersonic engine manufacturer Reaction Engines. Have we ever talked about this?
Yes, we have, but I usually haven't focused on the name of the company. I've focused on the thing they're trying to make, which is a ramjet reusable space plane called Skyroarer. And they've been trying to do this since 2011. Skyline, I'm sorry, is the name of the plane, space plane. And they've been trying to do this in 2011, and they've gotten a variety of development contracts, but they've never really got anything really built. And so after almost more than two decades of construction, they finally could not raise any more money. They point out that two major companies, including Rolls-Royce, were unwilling to put up any bailout money. And so basically the company went bankrupt. They're not going to make it. You know, once again, the idea might be a good one, but if you don't get anything accomplished, you're going to go belly up. And that's what's happened here. And this is a European company, by the way. This is a UK company, United Kingdom, British company, and it's going bankrupt now. No hypersonic engines. It's been building engines, but it hasn't built the plane it promised at any point.
And the big astronomy is back complaining about satellite constellations. Is it a genuine problem, or are they worried about the future?
It's a case of astronomers whining about progress. What happened is more than 100 astronomers have written a letter to the FCC demanding that the FCC halt, do a complete halt of any licenses for any of the lowest Earth satellite constellations that are under construction right now. That includes Starlink, OneWeb, Kuiper, and then a bunch of Chinese satellites as well, which they'd have no control over, constellations. But they want a complete halt of all those constellations, and they claim it's because of the environmental consequences that might occur as those satellites burn up in the atmosphere. This is absolutely absurd. What they're really complaining about is they fear that their ground-based astronomy is going to be impacted by the number of satellites in orbit. Now, one, they can clean that data up easily with modern software. That's not a problem for the astronomers. And secondly, they should stop trying to prevent others from achieving progress. They should instead go to space-based astronomy. It's a much better solution because it not only gets them above the constellations, it gets them above the atmosphere. And they immediately get better data all across the board, as Hubble has proved endlessly, as the new Einstein telescope is proving, as numerous optical the Kepler telescope proved, and TESS is now proving. You get above the atmosphere, you get real work done much more effectively and with less money. But they instead whine, and they want to shut everybody else down. The FCC does not have the statutory authority to do this, and so it's not likely it will happen. The change in administrations is going to make it even more unlikely, but it just shows that there's a lot of people in the astronomy community that are Luddites, that are not willing to move forward with and deal with progress, with their own progress, and it's unfortunate.
Bob Zimmerman, we're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he's here with Behind the Black, and we're going immediately to check in on solar activity. Bob, any change of direction? We were talking maximum.
Yes, we're still in the maximum, but, you know, the sun last month crashed in terms of activity after going super high the previous few months, totally outside the predictions, totally. The predictions have all been wrong. And so this last month, I do this every month, and this last month, the activity rose again after the crash of last month, but it didn't rise to the level it was before the previous 2 months ago, but it did rise to the level it had during the summer. And in all cases, this is way above the predictions. Bottom line is, it just proves once again, we have no idea what the sun's going to do. We don't understand these processes. And this, of course, is a fundamental factor in studying the climate. Since we don't understand the sun, we cannot say anything in climate research is settled. We don't know anything about what the climate will do because we do not know what the sun is going to do. And the sun keeps proving this month to month, John.
We go to the surface of Mars. This is really cool. His name is Peter Bueller. He's at the Planetary Science Institute Research, and he's looking at the problem of, was there ever liquid water on the surface of Mars? Explain, Bob.
Yeah, all right. So the basic problem, Mars, is that we see a lot of geological features on the planet that suggest water flowed at some point on the surface. Lots of geological features said this. This has been evident from the first Mariner 9 orbiter pictures back in 71. The problem is that Mars's atmosphere has always been too cold and too thin for liquid water to flow on the surface. It's just not possible. Instead, what would happen is water would go from an ice directly, sublimate directly to a gas in that environment. And there have been a whole bunch of different models, computer models, and hypotheses trying to come up with some way to get water flowing on the surface of Mars. Either the atmosphere was thicker once and warmer, and what the causes were. People come up with all kinds of theories. Not one of these models has proven to be acceptable, or it's not that they're rejected, but they don't satisfy. No one is really convinced by any of them. Well, so this guy Peter Bula has come up with his own theory, and he's actually combining it with ice. And carbon dioxide ice on the planet, and to say that this could conceivably explain the flowing channels, whereby you get the surface covered by, you have a ice sheet on the ground, and then it's covered by a carbon dioxide sheet of ice, dry ice, and then that causes, for a variety of reasons, the ice underneath to melt, and because it's insulated by the upper layers, it can stay as water for a period of time, and that allows the water to flow. And so you get a combination of ice and water flowing down these channels, carving them out. That's his theory. That's a simplified description of his theory. It's conceivable. It's possible. Does it really work? I have no idea. It just is one of the models. The one thing about it that's of most interest, John, is that it's now bringing ice into the equation, and that's something I've noticed the scientists have been increasingly doing, considering the possibility that ice formed these channels, glaciers, not liquid water. And this one's not going that far. It's still trying to put water into the equation, liquid water, but it's now putting ice into the equation. And, you know, this is part of the science process. They switch ideas very slowly.
CubeSats on HERA. What's HERA?
Here is a probe going to Deimos and Dimorphos. The Dimorphos is the one that DART impacted, and it's going. It's a European probe. It's going to study the post-impact situation at those asteroids. It carries with it, though, two small CubeSats that are going to fly in tandem with Hera. And this is becoming traditional now, and it's a good idea. They have now established good communications with those two CubeSats, so they're operating, so this is a good thing, and the thing's on its way, John.
And WISE, NEOWISE, what is that, Bob?
This was a probe, infrared telescope, a wide-field infrared telescope that's been up since for 15 years. It has tracked the entire infrared sky, discovering millions of black holes and other luminous galaxies. It also was used in its later years to look for new asteroids that were near-Earth asteroids. It tracked about 3,000 and discovered about 200 new ones. It finally burned up in the atmosphere this past week because it had run out of fuel.
You know, I wonder, Bob, if anybody's going to go back and figure out what that cost to get into orbit and what it would cost today because of SpaceX.
It was expensive to get into orbit, but this was one of NASA's good probes. They didn't spend a lot of money making this. So it was relatively cheap, and it paid off enormously in terms of cost.
All right, now here's the cool story. What is Vega?
Vega is a star, relatively near star, that we've known has an accretion disk around it. Well, they used both Hubble and Webb to look at it. And what the data from Hubble and Webb tells us is there are no gaps in that accretion disk.
Right.
It's relatively smooth. There are no exoplanets forming within it, which is puzzling, and they don't really understand it. But once again, science always surprises. It does what it wants to do, reality, not what you want it to do.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Beyond the Black. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.